Hi, this is Dennis Dyack, and you're listening to Radio Free Nintendo.
Thanks, Dennis. If you guys want to hear more from Dennis Dyack, remember to go to NintendoReport.com and read our latest interview. Hello and welcome to another episode of Radio Free Nintendo, courtesy of NintendoReport.com. I'm your host, Carl Castaneda. And joining me today, Mike Sklenz.
Hello, folks.
And Stephen Witty Man Rodriguez.
Says folks.
What?
Who says folks? I said folks. Folks. What, folks. Like Arkansas or something?
Folks. I don't know.
Hey, partners.
Yeah, there's no Johnny this week because he's in Alabama. So, yeah.
He says folks.
He says folks. And what? Anyway, so
why?
What? What? Anyway,
what? Okay.
No. Now this podcast is explicit. So let's go ahead and move into new business. And Wendy, you were telling me that you had some new business, so launch right into it.
Yeah, this past week, my parents have been kind of curious about what I did at E3, mm-hmm. and I told them about Wii Fit. And my mom has been losing weight lately, and she's been trying to get my dad to lose some weight because he's pretty overweight. So I told him about Wii Fit, about it's this little board you just step on, you can do these simple exercises, you can do yoga, you can play these games.
Sure.
My mom's interest is immediately perked. She noticeably interested in it, and she did play some Wii Sports when she went over to my sister's house in Texas a couple of months ago. Mm-hmm. And she said she had a really good time with it, but she never really had any incentive to play the Wii that I have. So I'm thinking about, I kind of wanted to get Wii Fit after I played it, but now my parents are kind of interested in it, and I think I'm going to get it just for everybody in the house.
Right.
So I think that Nintendo is, caught me just like they've caught everybody else in this whole Wii is for everybody kind of thing.
Yeah, Wii Fit definitely seems like, I don't think my parents know about it yet, but if I were to tell them about it, I think my mom would be instantly interested in purchasing it.
Yes.
Well, yeah, I don't think anyone's going to doubt that Nintendo's really cornering that new market. I mean, they're doing a spectacular job of it. It's the whole hardcore thing that they're going to have some trouble with.
Not really.
Mario,
Metroid, Zelda DS, Smash Brothers.
That's great, that's only, maybe half of their releases are for the hardcore market. And it feels like to me, instead of they've cut the hardcore market in half and used the extra resources to build into the new market, it feels to me like they should have doubled their resources from the beginning and done an equal amount in both.
They are making a lot of money.
Yeah, I think you've got a point there. But Nintendo knows they're going to get Nintendo's fans no matter what it does. And I said this in the mailbag, people are saying, oh no, Nintendo's E3 press conference was a bust. Well, it was a bust to us.
Wendy, you can never say, oh, whatever, Nintendo will have their fans no matter what. That is so untrue,
yeah,
it's ridiculous.
If they screw up enough times, they'll lose fans.
Oh, dude, there is... loyalty can only go so far. And I think we've seen that in Nintendo's history time and time again.
Okay, you say they screw up enough times, right?
Right.
So let's see, cartridges on the N64...
Yeah, and look what happened. And look what happened.
Okay, Wendy, let me put it this way. What happened, brand loyalty, is an important thing, but look at what happened to the PlayStation brand after the PlayStation 2. It's tanking, and everyone's moving over to Xbox.
Right.
Yes, this is true. But, I meant the ones that they currently have. People are going to buy Mario, Metroid, and Smash Brothers, no matter what Nintendo does.
Really? Because Metroid Prime 2 didn't sell that well.
Yeah, Metroid Prime 2 didn't sell well. But let me put it this way. Nintendo could have all of my gaming dollars if they wanted. Instead, they're getting half of my gaming dollars because they're not putting enough product out for me to buy, so I bought an Xbox to fill the void.
Exactly.
Nintendo is only so big. They can only devote so many of the resources here and there.
Oh, that's
you want
just
them to
not...
magically double in size overnight?
They doubled their money. They've doubled their money. Why not?
They're making more money, but they have historically had ridiculously huge coffers full of cash that they don't use for anything, and they could really be doing more. They could be doing more with third parties. They could be doing more of everything, but they're not. They're not growing. And I know, but it feels like they could have more of my gaming dollar. They could have more of Carl's gaming dollar. They could have more of every Nintendo fan's gaming dollar if they put out more product, because I'm eager to buy it. It's just not there.
Yeah, but right now Nintendo's priority is the Blue Ocean gamer.
Well, sure.
So you can't. And Wii's are going to sell no matter what you think or what Nintendo does.
And I'm not faulting them for that. I'm saying that if they want to be the Nintendo that just goes after the non-gamer and the lapsed gamer, whatever the hell they want to call it, that's fine. If that's what kind of market they want to be in, that's okay. That can be their little niche, and they can make tons of money and be happy with it. But don't have them tell me that they're still courting the hardcore gamer when their big hardcore library this fall is Metroid, Mario, and Smash Brothers. That is a good lineup, but it's not a hardcore lineup.
It's not. It's a good lineup. You just said it yourself.
But it's not Halo 3, Assassin's Creed level of, you know, huge epic games. They're just the standard fare of Nintendo, where they're extremely good, but they're not like massive. You know, Mario is not going to have a 60-hour quest. I really don't think it will.
Do you realize what you're saying? That Mario is not the massive game.
No, Mario is massive, but Mario is not hardcore. Mario
so what's
appeals
the,
to
what's
everybody.
The argument here? It's massive.
Right.
You guys
not...
are saying, where's our hardcore games? Nintendo has never been a hardcore game system.
Yeah, but they
when has it
be...
ever been hardcore?
It's... Super Nintendo, NES?
No, it's been for everybody still.
Yeah, but it included enough hardcore games that a hardcore gamer could easily get their fill of whatever game they kind of... whatever
from
genre
Nintendo
they needed.
From third parties?
From... it, well, when you have... when Nintendo shows people how to do something, it will follow on their system. There was no online on the GameCube because Nintendo did not set an example for everyone else. Now that they're setting a good example with how to do motion controls on the Wii, third parties are following. But if they don't want to do hardcore games, no one else will.
Yeah, they're not... this is... Johnny's made this argument a million times where the Wii lost all its sports games because... or not the Wii, the GameCube lost all its sports games because Nintendo wasn't willing to make their own sports games to prove that the GameCube was a system for sports. And the same is happening. I mean... Nintendo.
What do you mean the same is happening? Madden, FIFA is going to be online?
EA, but EA always supported the GameCube with sports titles.
So what's the point?
Well, I don't believe all pro football is there. I mean, it doesn't matter whether it's a good game or a bad game. The fact is that if EA, you know, there's not enough of anything. Like, there's no first-person shooters on the Wii, no really quality ones at least. And yeah, Metroid's going to come out, but I really don't think it's going to change
Medal of Honor
things.
32-player online?
That's not out yet.
That's coming.
And you know what? Smash Brothers was supposed to be online when they announced it 3 years ago, and now they dodged that question at every corner.
Yeah, that everybody's still worried about that, and I've been pessimistic of that since day one. So I can't... I mean, I'm not going
to
say anything because
Nintendo used
Nintendo
to embrace
it,
and support third parties back on the Super Nintendo. Like, they were all about third parties, and they had lots of third-party games, but the N64 rolled around, and they sort of, like, had this idea where they were going to create the dream team of developers and said, screw off to everybody else, and no games ended up on the N64 as a result of that.
You do know why that Nintendo liked third parties so much on the SNES is because they were basically, you know, milking them for licensing fees.
Well, yeah.
They can't get away with that anymore these days.
No, but they need to realize that. And, you know, they're starting to, but they haven't truly realized it. And there's not many AAA titles on Nintendo systems that don't come out of Nintendo. And that's not true of PlayStation brand or the Xbox brand. You know, one of the biggest games out this holiday season is Assassin's Creed, and it's an Ubisoft game. That would never happen on a Nintendo system.
Well, except for Resident Evil 4.
Yeah, that was like, you know, that's one game.
And it was like 2 years ago. So, there you go.
Yeah, but just nowadays, Nintendo's, just more than ever, Nintendo's always relied on themselves. And yes, I do agree that they still need to put third parties in, but third party games on Nintendo systems have never been as important as they were on PlayStation or Xbox.
That's because they've never been as good as they've been on other systems.
Exactly.
All right. Anyways, we've gone along too far on that topic.
All right, fine. Let's move on to our community section. First up, we've got our hot topic, which was, what do you think of E3 this year? And we've got a couple comments here. First up from Spaxbang, who says, bottom line is this E3 was average. But it really wasn't the fault of the press conferences, but a direct result of the restructuring of E3. And despite any of the problems one may have had with the event or the press conferences, there is no denying that several great games are coming out this year on every system. And that is very good for the entire gaming market, but bad for the gamer's wallet.
I would agree with that. The restructuring definitely hurt E3. And hopefully, you know, they put out a poll saying, you know, what location do you think will be best for E3 next year? And I think a lot of people are going to vote to move it back to Los Angeles just because it means it'll be out of the hotels and back into the conference center. Even if it's still really locked down in the conference center, that's the way it should have been this year. There's no reason to run all around Santa Monica when you could just put everyone in a suite in the same building that's the Los Angeles Convention Center.
Yeah, I also got that response, that questionnaire, and I voted LA too, but one of the options was also San Diego.
Hmm.
Which might be a happy medium between the lovely sights of Santa Monica and the readily available large convention access of Los Angeles.
If anything, I think they might move. One of the options on that list was San Francisco.
Yeah.
And that seems like an even more obvious position because all the companies are up in that area anyway. And if they're not there, they're up in Washington or, you know, Oregon. And that's all, you know, that's much closer to San Francisco than it is to Los Angeles.
Yeah, I mean, but it's no different than LA. I mean, a lot of companies are based in LA.
But it's cheaper for. I think there's more. Microsoft and Nintendo are both up in Washington, and that means a lot.
Yeah.
And it means, you know, it'll be cheaper to move everyone to San Francisco.
What's another 400 or 500 miles? Seriously,
it could mean a lot on a plane ticket. Plane tickets for a whole company.
Also, didn't Nintendo move some of its offices to San Francisco?
Yeah, and they.
Yeah, that's taking place later this year.
So maybe that also have something to do with it.
I wouldn't be surprised if we see it in San Francisco next year. Almost all of the major gaming press is already in San Francisco.
Sure, Ziff Davis,
and they're all going to vote for San Francisco. They don't want to have to fly people out to LA if they can drive them down the street.
Exactly. So there you go. We've got another comment here from Voodoo who says the biggest problem with the new format is that the publishers can only show a limited number of games, and therefore we're going to focus on their biggest ones. Since most of us already know everything there is to know about these games, there's not a whole lot of new information. Meanwhile, the smaller games those early in development get glossed over or skipped completely. The result is a boring show for those of us who follow the industry the other 51 weeks out of the year.
I think it's better that they're only showing games that are mostly done, because there are a lot of pitfalls in showing off games that are really early. I mean, just take Two Human from last year.
Dennis Dyack.
You can... We talk about this a little bit in our interview with him on the site, but publishers really want to try to they've always wanted complete control over when games get showed off to the press and when public can first hear about new games. I mean, they time announcements specifically to do certain things, and you know, first previews and first let you play the game until it's almost ready. But the E3 is that one point where everybody looks at everybody's games and get to compare to each other. So it wouldn't make much sense for a publisher show everything they have and when they only have two or three games that are really worth showing off compared to the competition.
Sure.
And it's not like the publishers were forced to show fewer games. It's just that it made more sense for them to show fewer games. Just because a booth appointment's only an hour. So basically, for all the publisher knew, they would only have like an hour with a certain publication to show off all the games they had. So they're not going to blast them with 30 games that they have upcoming. They're just going to show them like the key 5 or 6.
And that's really what they did when you went to the old E3 and you scheduled a booth tour. That's what they did in the first place. They just took you to the big titles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and even on the show floor, they only showed the big titles. I mean, Nintendo's booth was the exception, or Nintendo and Sony and Microsoft's booths were the exception because they wanted to show everything for the system on the showcase. But the individual publisher booths, they always just showed the big games they're showing anyway. Just because, like, Nintendo only had 6 games or 7 games this year to show. That's what they usually have in a given year anyway. It's just that they also have all the third-party games in their booth.
Or they also have that wall of smaller first-party titles, like that wall of DSs where it'll be almost all first-party titles, and that kind of thing wasn't there this year.
But generally from year to year, Nintendo only has that many games to show off, major games to show off anyway. So it's not like there's anything that was lost. It's just that you didn't get it all at once like you're used to.
Well, I'd like to mention something that was lost, and this is really what I think the biggest travesty of the new E3 is, that the smaller publishers and developers were essentially completely shut out of the show. And I just like to give everyone an example that I think will sort of make sense, where a couple years ago, Guitar Hero was at E3, and it was down in Kensha Hall, they didn't let really that many people who got to see it. And if it hadn't been at E3 that year, it would not have blown up the way it blew up. I mean, that game made itself on E3. You know, a couple of key people saw it at the show, and they fell in love with it, and they talked it up, and it made it to 1UP and all the big sites. But imagine if that had been this year. Harmonix wouldn't even be at the show because they wouldn't have gotten an invite, and Guitar Hero wouldn't exist.
Probably.
And, you know, just, like, think about that for a moment. I'd really like the ESA to think about that. I hope someone at that organization listens to this. Just think of that for a moment. If you completely shut out the independent developers like you did this year, you are missing, you know, a real big chance for a lot of quality games to make it out. You know, Katamari Damacy came from a major publisher too, but it was on nobody's radar until someone saw it at E3 and was like, what the hell is this? And everyone talked about it.
Yeah.
It wouldn't, you know, again, with the smaller booths, Namco wouldn't have been showing that game off because they wouldn't have had the space.
Sure.
And it would have been lost and no one would have played it, and it probably wouldn't have even made it to America.
you know, I think one of the just the general tragedies of the new E3 is that there was no Kencha Hall.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, there's no, there's, if there's no, they're not supporting.
There was, you know, no, 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 no. I meant that in the way that there was no, like, side freak show.
Right, yeah, but right. At the same time, they're not supporting a whole section of their industry just because that section doesn't, you know, make enough money. And that's really, like, that's really just not fair at all.
I guess that's what, I guess that's why GDC kind of had an E3 feel this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could say that.
I mean, there is the Independence Game Festival after GDC, but it doesn't
there's
get...
no media exposure at that, you
well,
know?
I mean, there is a little bit. I mean, this year you saw that one game from that kid who made that game, Everyday Shooter.
Okay, well...
And now that's appearing on PSN, so you can make the argument that there is some sort of exposure
there. There's exposure there, but there's no media exposure. CNN does not go to the Game Developers Conference.
Well, no, no.
CNN goes to E3.
But CNN would never cover Guitar Hero anyway.
They might have if someone at the show said, hey, I played this game, you should go check it out. And then someone from CNN plays it, and they're like, oh, this is awesome. It's, you know, it's all word of mouth. And without anyone there to hear it, you know, if CNN's not there to hear it, then CNN doesn't even stand a chance on reporting it.
I suppose not. All right then, guys, let's go on to our listener mail. We have somebody here who's been on many times on the show, but hasn't been on in a while, Saturn. And he asks us, with today's update on the website, and he's referring to smashbros.com, I think it would call for a Zo My God Leroy from a staffer who is willing to do it. Cough, Johnny. Well, Johnny's not
here.
See, you got it from me. I'll record it if you need. Like, seriously, the next episode needs that. Super Smash Bros. Brawl with a storyline like that. And for those of you who don't understand what's going on, basically there was an update on SmashBros.com on Friday. And it explained, it was kind of like a weird look into the story mode, I suppose, of the game.
It was really vague.
It was very vague. And basically it was screenshots with little caps underneath. It showed two trophies appearing. One is of Kirby, one is of Mario. And they're, you know, animated into life.
Let me
start fighting
for a moment. I believe that all the screenshots, I mean, you know, there's no way to confirm this, but it looked like all the screenshots we saw were probably from the opening cinematic.
Probably, yeah. That's likely, yeah. And so they animate to life, and they start fighting, and then it's obvious that Mario wins, and Kirby turns back into a trophy. And it's explained that when someone loses in the world of Smash Brothers, they turn back into a trophy, and that's something like death. Of course, Mario is... for some reason able to reanimate you again because Kirby turns back into life and they shake hands and, you know, everything, all is good. And then it says that, but sometimes these rules are broken, and when that happens, the world will pay a terrible price. And then the Meta Knight airship shows up, and you see something land on the ground, which kind of looks like a cross between a Pikmin and that thing from Little Big Planet. I wouldn't really know how to explain it, but it's got like a...
It kind of looks like a puppet, yeah.
I'd say
it kind of looks like a wooden marionette.
I thought it kind of looked like something from Paper Mario.
Yeah, I can see that too. It looks like it also kind of reminds me of the Heartless from Kingdom Hearts.
A little bit.
The coloration and the stuff like that.
Right.
Anyway.
Oh my god, Mickey confirmed in Super Smash Bros.
That would be something. But it's so. We've basically seen a little bit into the story mode, and it was definitely an interesting update. I think it's one of the most. One of the most important updates they've done in a while, you know. And even though it didn't really tell us much, it was really just. I thought it was really interesting just to see into the story mode just a little bit.
It was a tease.
It was a very big tease. And of course, on Monday, you know, today, the day that we're recording this, they go back to, you know, just regular.
I'd like to talk about today's update. I was incredibly disappointed with today's update because they showed off a new stage and it scrolled. It was one of those stages where you had to constantly climb. And I just wanted to, like, reach through the computer and punch somebody in the face because those are the most terrible stages in Smash Brothers.
I think it's confirmation that there won't be ice climbers in the new one. Because that stage that the Ice Climbers had in Smash Bros. Melee is not coming back.
No, at the same time, I was also kind of happy that this stage existed, because up until now, almost every stage we'd actually seen looked like some sort of floating platform, and like a very bland floating platform in front of a background that was themed to a video game. Like, the Mario Sunshine level was like that. You know, it's a platform that flies around the level, and the Animal Crossing level looked like Final Destination in a forest. But there was nothing to it. It was just a flat level.
Well,
and then all of the stages looked like Final Destination or Battlefield, except they were gussied up. There wasn't anything special about any of them. And I'm really glad at least we got something special, even if it also happens to suck.
Yeah. How many stages have they revealed so far?
Like I'm not sure, but yeah, that seems about right.
I mean, there's probably going to be like 20 or 30 in the game, so I wouldn't be too worried. Right?
I'm worried because there seems to be a trend of they've only revealed, you know, stages that look very bland.
Well, I mean...
They're going to get the crap out of the way first.
I thought the Animal Crossing stage looked really cool, because if you go there...
7 o'clock on Saturday?
Well, yeah, sure. The guy plays the guitar.
Yeah.
That's cool.
But again, that's all, you know, that's all ambient and may have no effect on gameplay.
Well, that's true.
They've revealed 7 stages. Battlefield, which is Battlefield. It's, you know, a level with three platforms. Right. Delfino Plaza flies around. Yoshi's Island is...
Oh, yeah.
Yoshi's Island is a large area with one platform. Battle of Elden... The Bridge of Elden is a right. flat level, except the center falls out every now and then. The Animal Crossing level is just flat. And then the other one... was the Star Fox Lilac Cruise
oh,
level.
Hey, what about the Mario Kart level?
They've shown that, yeah.
But they haven't officially like shown that on the website.
And if you look at, you know, the Lilac Cruise level, again, it looks like, you know, it's a flat platform with three platforms floating above it, and it's just like, you know, what is special about any of these stages? They're all really bland looking to me.
I guess we'll see.
We'll have to wait and see on
or
that.
Or maybe they are bland.
Maybe. But I mean,
maybe
I
that's what
hate
people really want.
I would hate for that. I want more, you know, Planet Zebes with the, even the lava's kind of annoying, but you know, the level's really dynamic, or something like, even though it was probably a little too big, you know, the Zelda's castle, you know, with all the different areas on it, and really advanced levels where lots of stuff was going on, not like these flat levels where nothing appears to happen.
Yeah.
I always thought it was Zebes. Is it Zebes?
Zebes. I call it Zebes.
Zebes.
I always thought it was, all right, maybe I'm wrong. And on that note, let's go ahead and take a quick break. When we come back, we're talking about the news, and it's NPD, so stay tuned. Yeah. Alrighty, folks, and we're back. First up, VC Mondays. Today, Kirby's Dream Course, Devil's Crush, and Shining Force have been released on the SNES, TurboGrafx-16, and Genesis, respectively. And Mike, I know, was playing a lot of Kirby's Dream Course before we recorded, so
yeah,
I'm going to let him talk
about that. Kirby's Dream Course is really good. I've already written my review, my mini review, so I can already tell you that I'm recommending it for everyone, because it's really like this interesting, you could almost call it a platforming golf game, where, you know, you aim up your shot, and then you shoot Kirby, but you have to get around all these obstacles, and you can kill dudes and get their powers and use their powers to, you know, play the courses differently, and it's really, really interesting and fun, and it's challenging, and I've wanted to throw my controller across the room about like 50 times, because I'll get Kirby and I'll like, the shot will be almost there, but it'll be like literally a millimeter away from falling into the hole, and I just get so pissed off.
It's true, I've seen it. And let's see, there was also Devil's Crush, and
Wendy, you got Devil's Crush,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Devil's Crush is just another pinball game along the same line as Alien Crush, which is also a very good pinball game on the TurboGrafx. I haven't played that much of it, but it looks pretty good.
Everyone says it's better than Alien Crush.
Well, it's a sequel.
Probably,
so.
Since it's like, you know...
A sequel.
I didn't buy Alien Crush because when it came out, everyone says, oh, wait for Devil's Crush. But I haven't bought Devil's Crush yet because I don't like buying more than one Virtual Console game like a month.
And last up is Shining Force, which I guess is the start of that really, you know, long-running series. Now they've had... like Shining Force Neo X and all that weird stuff up. So if you want to find out where that franchise came from, try it out. Or go to our Virtual Console Mondays Roundup and see if it was any good.
Yes, do that instead.
Do that instead, yeah.
Don't waste your hard-earned Wii points until you know whether we think you should or not.
Sure. And but let's get started with the actual news. And first up, it's the June NPD.
Yay.
And here come the numbers. All right, for the hardware, DS has sold 561,000 units. All right, and right behind that is Wii with 381,000. And followed by that is PSP with 290, PS2 with 270, 360 with 198, GBA with 113, and last up, PS3 with 98.
Ouch.
Actually, the PSP only sold 230. They revised that right after.
Oh, okay. I must have the older numbers then. So there you go. And so, yeah. DS and Wii dominating once again, with DS especially.
Yeah.
That's
ridiculous.
Yeah,
that's just ridiculous.
So we got to point out that June was a 5-week month,
yes.
So these numbers are
it's
a little
still
higher
ridiculous.
Than usual, but still a ton.
561,000, that's more than 100,000 per week.
Yeah.
That is ridiculous.
That's
I mean,
a lot of units.
DS is a monster everywhere. In America, Japan, wherever it is.
It's even crazier in Japan.
Oh, sure,
which
absolutely.
Is crazy in itself.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the Wii is still pulling along strong with 381, which is more than last month, isn't it?
Well, yeah, because it's an extra week.
Well, yeah, but I mean, still, I mean, I think it's much more. Like, I think Wii was in, like, the low 300s last month. So.
Yeah, but it still had an extra week of sales.
I suppose.
That's why it was so much more.
I guess because it's selling so much more in a week. And, again, the PS3 is a sob story with... coming
not
last.
Not even 100,000.
I'm 100,000. Below GBA again.
Hopefully they'll move some units through July or with their fire sale tactics.
Right. And I'll ask the question for Johnny since he's not here. How many of those GBAs are micros? And we don't know, because there's probably none of them.
Well, they'll let us know on the end of your financial statements.
Sure. And,
but it's probably not many.
Probably not that many. Let's go ahead and move on to software. Mario Party 8 is dominating with 426,000 units sold.
Stop buying this game. It'll never get good unless you stop buying it, people.
You know, it sucks. There's absolutely nothing we can do about it. People are just going to buy it because it's the first Mario Party game on the Wii.
Yeah.
And once they've bought it, they can't do anything. That's why you have to read our review at Nintendo World Report before you do
They're
anything.
They're still going
to
buy Mario Party
foolish.
9, though. They're going to buy Mario Party 9. People always buy Mario Party. I don't know why.
It's a constant
seller.
It's gone
seller. So far downhill.
It's a constant seller.
And I really thought this version was going to save things, and they just didn't put any effort into it.
Nope. Well, thanks a lot, Hudson. Next up, Wii Play with Remote sells 293,000, which, you know, still pulling
still,
it strong.
Yeah.
Still not, I mean, you know, it's $10 for a game and $40 for a remote. That's how it always has been.
I'm not entirely sure anymore if people are just buying it for the remote, because remotes are pretty easy to come by now.
Yeah.
It's, yeah, but like, when you look at the value proposition there, when you look at the value proposition is I could have a remote for $40 or I could have a remote and a game for $50, and most people aren't going to know how minimalistic that game is to begin with. They're probably going to think it's on the same level as Wii Sports because it fits in the same brand.
I think by now people should have figured out that Wii Plays...
No, gamers will have figured that out, but Joe Average, who's buying a Wii because he thinks it looks cool, does not do that much research on the internet and just sees the box and sees remote with like 16 games included, and that's a really good sell.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I suppose. Which is why it's probably still selling.
Yeah,
right. And okay. Speaking of still selling, Pokemon Diamond and Pearl sell 288 and 214,000 respectively.
Diamond's still cooler than Pearls.
Yep, that's why I've got Diamond. And yeah, you know, they deserve it. They're really good games. After that, 360 has Forza Motorsport 2 selling 197, and the Guitar Hero sell 197 and 177 respectively on PS2 and 360. Pokemon Battle Revolution coming in strong with
157,000.
Boo. And, well, now we can cheer for this one because Resident Evil 4 is number 9.
Yay!
Yeah. That's it. I'm sure it'll probably move up the list, too, because it came out, what, halfway through July?
I think it came out last week of June.
If it came out the last week and it hit the top 10, I'd say that's pretty good.
So, yeah, good for Resident Evil 4, because that's a good game.
It's an awesome game.
That'll move a lot of units from people who didn't own GameCubes and would like to play that game.
Sure. And last up, The Darkness on 360. So, there you go. That's closed ups for NPDs, and really nothing really that surprising there. Wii sells well, DS sells well, Nintendo doing well, Sony not so much. All right.
Well, they had one game
they had
in
one,
the top 10, and it was
had,
Guitar Hero.
Yeah, yeah, on PS2.
Yeah, but it's not really their game.
And it's not. It's not even their game, exactly. That should show you where Sony is right now.
Has a PS3 game ever been in the top 10?
I think Virtual Fighter 5 was.
I think the week it came out, like, The Darkness hit or something. Resistance.
Or Resistance?
Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
And Motorstorm, I think, might have cracked in there at one point, too.
That one did as well, but they usually fall out right away. So
yeah, they don't have the staying power of Wii Play and Mario Party 8.
Well, speaking of Microsoft, Peter Moore is leaving to go work at EA. So
yes, this is probably the biggest story of E3. In that,
even though it wasn't really at E3, it was immediately.
Yeah,
after,
in retrospect, it was the biggest story probably because Peter Moore is already, by the time he was presenting during the press conference, sucking at Rock Band, he knew, and I think probably everybody at Microsoft knew,
sure. He
was going to EA. So that was kind of interesting. If you look back at it.
Well, yeah. And he's going to be replaced by Don Matrick, who's actually a former EA CEO. And,
so they're kind of doing the musical chairs kind of thing.
Yeah.
A little bit. I mean, I remember...
This means really good relations between Microsoft and EA, though.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
They're going to be even tighter knit, especially now that, you know, EA used to be all about PlayStation because PlayStation is where the money was, but they're definitely shifting gears. They're doing a lot more development for Nintendo than they ever have in recent years, and they're also doing a lot more with Microsoft.
Absolutely. 60 frames. And it's important to note that Don Matrick left EA because he did not want to, quote, run a public company. So that's why I guess he's at Microsoft.
But Microsoft is publicly traded.
So maybe he's just a hypocrite.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense to me.
I don't know. That's the reason he gave.
You know, I'm quite disappointed that Jeff, my voice is perfect, Bell, was not...
Let's not talk about Jeff Bell.
Poor Jeff. Jeff, you're... You know what? No, I don't think Jeff has any real contribution to gaming society, so let's move on.
Let's not talk about Jeff. Let's not talk about it. If you're interested in knowing the whole fiasco with Jeff Bell, search his name on 1UP.com, find a news story, read it, laugh, and forget his name.
Anyways, let's just go on to the next one.
Rockstar Games is porting Bully and Table Tennis to the Wii, which is great news because they're both good games.
And
Table Tennis.
Yeah, Table Tennis just seems like, well, duh.
Yeah.
And I heard Bully was pretty good too, so I'm glad.
Bully got really good scores. Like, apparently it's a really, really good game, and it's going to have some extra content, so.
I might end up picking that up because Rockstar has made, Rockstar has really turned into I guess they always sort of has been since Grand Theft Auto 3, but now that they're, really pushing out and expanding beyond one franchise and they've got a whole bunch of irons in the fire, it seems like they're really, like, everything that comes out of them is really high quality.
Mm-hmm. It's also important to note that Bully is going to 360, which means it's probably just going to be upscaled to high def and re-released. But as far as the Wii version, I'm expecting, PS2 port with Wago controls.
Rockstar has always been making good games. It's just that Grand Theft Auto was her first, breakout hit.
Because
how could you forget about Uniracers, damn it?
Oh, yeah. Uniracers was awesome.
And then Table Tennis. I'm curious about Table Tennis because it runs on the Rage engine, which is also what's powering GTA 4. So I'm wondering how they're going to take that down to Wii, but...
GTA 4 on Wii confirmed.
Well, the Rage engine, it's all about, realistic physics, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you could almost say that, Table Tennis was... I would almost actually assume that Table Tennis probably started as a physics tech demo.
Mm-hmm.
Just to see how accurate they could get it, and now they're going to be throwing motion controls into that, and it's like that's a no-brainer right there.
Absolutely. So, I expect to see good things, and I'm eager to see more about it. Speaking of new games, there have been two new announcements in the Tales of series, Tales of Innocence on the DS, and a sequel to one of my favorite games on the GameCube, Tales of Symphonia on the Wii.
Yay!
Which is awesome. Unfortunately, it doesn't look like Team Symphonia is working on the sequel. I'm not 100% sure on this, so don't quote me on it, but I think it's actually the Legendia team, which is not that great to hear, but let's hope. And it also looks like the linear motion battle system, which was in Symphonia, which is basically like a fighting game in an RPG. It looks like they're tweaking that a little bit too, so I don't know, we're gonna have to wait and see, but the graphics look good. So, at least there's that.
I'm kind of more interested in the DS game than in the Wii game. I don't think I'm up for another 80-hour game.
Well, they actually released a trailer of the DS game, and it looks fantastic. It looks almost as good as Symphonia on the GameCube.
Oh, really?
It looks fantastic. I'll have to see that. It's really, really good. In fact, we should probably write a preview on that. And maybe we will. last news story for the day. Dave Perry, who you'll know as the director of shit bombs like Enter the Matrix and that MMO where you have to pay to be black, has made a comment on the Wii.
What?
Should I explain that last comment?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, basically, he got involved with a claim to make a Korean dance MMO. And in it, you have the default character pigment, as far as their skin tone, is light skin. And to upgrade, quote-unquote, to having dark skin, that is considered a microtransaction.
It's like buying, like a hat or something.
Right. You have to pay to be black, basically.
Huh.
So go figure.
Interesting.
Very much so. It got a lot of press when they got announced, but eh.
Anyways, he said something, didn't he?
He said something about the Wii. He said when a game comes out, a game like Halo or something they haven't seen before, they'll drop everything and they'll drop their Wii controllers when it does, which is. Stupid.
No, wait, Carl, you need to say that with a lisp.
When a game comes out, a game like Halo or something they haven't seen before, they'll drop everything and they'll drop the Wii controllers when it does.
Oh, that was terrible. Oh my god. I think.
Well,
this,
that's how he talks if you want to get an accurate quote here, right?
This is, I think, there is some logic behind what he is saying, but it's not fully thought out. Like, I own an Xbox and a Wii, and I certainly won't be touching, my Wii, to put it in those terms, when Halo comes out, because I'll be playing Halo. But that doesn't mean I'm never gonna play my Wii ever again. Halo's not gonna, completely ruin the Wii forever. It's just, I'll play Halo for a while, and then the next game that comes out, I'll play that for a while, regardless of what system it's on.
Yeah, it makes it sound like once Halo comes out, it's the only thing we're gonna be playing ever, which is just ridiculous.
It'll be the
which
only mean, thing it, I that play also October though.
Yeah, I mean. His own quote basically damned his own game, which is actually Shiny's working on Golden Compass for Sega right now.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, his comments are implying that Halo 3 will render every single game released after it completely worthless, which is ridiculous.
Well, it's true for, like, you know, a period of time. No one will buy a game, like, anyone who buys Halo won't be buying a game, like, the first couple of weeks through October.
Sure. But I mean,
yeah, but then they'll just go back and buy the ones they missed.
Yeah, right. Or nothing's really coming out in the wake of Halo 3 because people are smart enough not to release games like that.
Yeah, and if anything, people won't buy Xbox 360 games because they've got Halo. So why do they have to buy anything other than Halo 3?
Well, let me make something really clear. The hardcore Halo market, which is going to be playing Halo for months and months and perhaps even years to come, is not exactly the same market as the one who plays with the Wii.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's another good point. You know, people aren't going to go drop, you know, $400 plus, you know, a controller, or not controller, plus the game, plus an Xbox Live account, you know, if they already have a Wii. You know, that's like, that's a lot of money. That's, you know, $500 plus right there.
Mm-hmm.
And just to, you know, as an entrance fee if you don't already have the system.
Yeah.
And that's not going to happen. I mean, people will do it. You know, people were waiting for Halo 3 to buy a 360. You know, that's obvious.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not going to, you know, get rid of every other game console they've ever owned just because Halo 3 is coming out.
There you go.
And Halo 3 is not going to put up the numbers that Halo 2 put up either, so.
Exactly. Well, not initially.
No.
Maybe over time it will, but it will not get anywhere near the initial numbers for Halo 2.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because everybody had Xboxes when Halo 2 came out.
Yeah, right. And everybody who owned an Xbox pretty much bought that game. And everyone who owns an Xbox is going to buy Halo 3, but it's not as many people who owned Xboxes when Halo 2 came out.
Definitely not. And speaking of ridiculous comments, we've got a lot to talk about when we come back for the feature because Roger Ebert has opened his mouth yet again. So stay tuned, and we'll be back right after this break. Alrighty, folks, and we're back for our feature. Roger Ebert posted a blog on his website in which he argued with Clive Barker. Well, not really argued, because Clive Barker basically posted a response to something Ebert said like a year ago about games not being art, and he spoke to GameIndustry.biz about it, and then Roger Ebert found it and decided to post a rebuttal going point by point on Clive Barker's statements. And basically it all comes together in this small statement here where Ebert said, how do I know this?
How do I know that games aren't art?
Right, thank you. How do I know this? How many games have I played? I know it by the definition of the vast majority of games. They tend to involve, one, point-and-shoot in many variations and plot lines, two, treasure or scavenger hunts, as in Myst, and three, player control of the outcome. I don't think that these attributes have much to do with art. They have more in common with sports. And he has a valid point in that gaming is, in some examples, very competition-based, very much based on, you know, Twitch reaction and basically the visceral feeling of it. And in that case, I can see why he would not see it as art. However, I disagree with him when he says, and I know Mike will as well, player control of the outcome, in which most games are leading you on a path. And so you're not directly controlling the outcome. I mean, yeah, there are games like Knights of the Old Republic and, you know, GTA, where you have some sort of effect on, you know, sandboxy or, you know,
I think really he's. Roles. I think when he says that, he's more referring to like when he says he compares them directly to sports games, and I think he's more referring to Madden. Madden is really not even so much of a video game as it more is a football simulation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, it is extremely in depth, and you know, you can basically have, you know, you have your entire pretend football on that disc on your video game console.
Mm-hmm.
But really, that's an entire, you know, that's a competitive game that is an entirely different subset of games.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And so, yeah, I mean, it's really a shame because I wanted to get Evan on this podcast, but unfortunately he wasn't available at the time. And there's a big debate going on in our forums, which you can find, of course, at NintendoWorldReport.com. And there's a huge debate going on right now on whether or not games can be considered art. And what's important to note is that several, you know, very much, you know, even legendary game designers have said that games are not art. Hideo Kojima and both Shigeru Miyamoto have said time and time again, I don't consider games to be art. So should we just take their word for it? I mean, these guys are the ones making the games, or should we, you know, maybe look at it closer and say, well, no, there are games that you can consider art because they have a very stylized aesthetic, and there's a lot of time and care put into presentation and, you know, emotion and sort of developing a relationship between the game and the player, and that in the abstract nature of said experiences can be considered art because of, you know, like I said, it's abstract nature.
He's talking about Killer 7. He just doesn't want to say it because I'll punch him in the face.
Killer 7.
Punch him in the face.
So, yeah, I mean, but, and then, like I said, I wasn't going to say it, you know, explicitly, but Killer 7 is an artsy-fartsy game. It's you know, it's got, like, a very detailed and very art-like narrative in its complexity. And I know Mike was going to throw out Shadow of the Colossus.
Yeah, and well, more recently, even though it's not out yet, BioShock is almost entirely based on the writings of Ayn Rand, and I don't know how you couldn't call something like that art. You know, it's a game that looks at philosophical concepts, you know, through the construct of an underwater community built so people could isolate themselves from the world and experiment in science and, you know, have no moral issues at all. And it's just, you know, it conquers all these deep philosophical concepts in the confines of a first-person shooter.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the big problems from this Ebert thing is that he's kind of dodging around what exactly art is. Because he says films are art. Well, I can name you a movies that aren't art.
Transformers.
Yeah.
Is mindless. I mean, it may be entertaining, but it is not evocative. And I think that's the... When we're going to talk about what is art, I would say that essentially art is anything that evokes emotion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'll agree with that. And films can do that. And you know, cheap B-movies can do that, kind of. And it's the same thing with games. The correlation between film and games is that there are different levels of it. Like, high top-tier games, something like, you know, Metal Gear Solid 4, Too Human, when that comes out, that's going to make a case for games as art.
Shadow of the Colossus.
Shadow of the Colossus. Prince of Persia. Prince of Persia, I think, is a excellent example of how...
Like, that game is essentially a love story. So.
It is. It is. If you went up to Roger Ebert, he said, here's Prince of Persia. I can spoil this game for you, so it's not like I can determine the outcome. There is going to be an outcome. The process of me getting to the end is the same as if I was turning a page in a book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there might be cutscenes here and a narrative here. It's just like reading a book or watching a film.
Yeah,
but,
right.
I mean, that's like the best way to do it. Getting from point A to point B while you're actually playing the game, you're still immersed in that world. You're part of the story. Yeah.
Especially when we talk about Prince of Persia, the way it literally weaves its storyline in while you are playing the game. It's not limited to cutscenes, and there are almost no cutscenes in the game because almost all of the dialogue between the characters takes place while you're actually playing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's kind of the thing that if you read our interview with Dennis Dyack on the site, he compares video games as... He basically calls video games the eighth art, in which Canuto said that film was the seventh art, and... it's an art form that takes the previous art forms that came before it and just adds something to it. So mm-hmm. film added something to
visual.
Like dance and music and just visuals in general. They just made it and presented it in a way that's up on the screen. Well, mm-hmm. games basically do the same thing. It's just the thing they add to it is interactivity. And interactivity does not mean that the creator of the game loses control over what happens. You might have a different subset of games, like MMOs like WoW, which are open-ended. That's totally different. It's a completely different experience than, you know, playing through Prince of Persia or Resident Evil 4. Games like that, where you don't want people to tell you what happens at the end, just like a film. If I told you that, or even Harry Potter, if I told you that Hermione dies at the end, which is totally not true, by the way. If I told you Hermione dies, you'd be like, what the heck, man? I wanted to find that out for myself. I wanted to read the book for myself to find that out. Well, mm-hmm. it's the same kind of way. Even though most games are completely predictable, they still have a story.
A lot of movies are also. So.
Yeah, a lot of movies are too. It's just that you want to play the game and you want to see how it unfolds. You want to play the game. You want to see how the story affects you. That's the thing about it. You can consider it an art. It's not whether it's art or not. It's another art. It's just adding on top of the art that already exists.
Right. And if we look at artistic theories like the one posed in Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man, Stephen Dedalus makes the poses the theory that what art is an artist's realization of something that he has in his mind. Basically, if an artist sets out to do something and he accomplishes it, then it is art. So if you as a, you know, as a programmer, I guess, if in this case, or basically a game design team set out to make something and then you complete that, then it is art. And I would take the words of Stephen Dedalus over Roger Ebert any day. So there you go.
I'd like to go back to like where I earlier said that Madden is sort of like, you know, I wouldn't really call that an art. And I've sort of thought about that and I almost kind of would, because it sort of parallels in film, at least, you know, something like Die Hard or even Transformers is, you know, it's evocative in that, you know, it just presents you with these fantastic situations that you think are completely awesome, But there is no, you know, there's no philosophical level to it. It's just, you know, it's just pure excitement and adrenaline. And that's essentially what something like Madden is, or Halo's multiplayer aspect, or, you know, it's just pure adrenaline and it makes you excited. And it's sort of, you know, I would call them like the action movies of the video game world.
It's an interesting point.
And they're also sports movies.
Yeah, right. There's also, you know, there's sports movies. Those sports movies are usually about, you know, a character or a team overcomes adversity and defies all odds kind of thing. They're very inspirational. And I wouldn't really put Madden. I mean, you can take the worst team in Madden and bring it to the Super Bowl, but I wouldn't really think you would feel a huge sense of accomplishment because it's not that hard to do.
No.
You know, it's not a true story. It's not, you know, it's not the Miracle on Ice.
Rudy.
Yeah, Rudy's it's not Rudy. Happen. You know, there's, you know, it's
not Slapshot in the Hanson Brothers.
Definitely not.
It's the Mighty Ducks. Well, no, even the Mighty Ducks has all those elements.
So there you go. I mean,
no one would want to see a sports movie about the best team in the league who just beat the shit out of everybody and then won the Super Bowl. Well, it's okay. Not exciting.
All right, I'm gonna.
That's what we have reality for.
Like, here's my bottom line on games are art. On the games are art argument. Mm-hmm. Just like with movies, there are some that are definitely a tier above the rest.
Right.
Only a handful of movies can even be nominated or considered for the Academy Awards, and those are just a select few, like the minority. All the rest that come out straight to DVD, really crappy box office movies, popcorn movies, all that kind of stuff. You could make an argument against them not being art.
In a cinematic sense, in that sense, as far as a visual, they can still look very good. But, you know, the latest Adam Sandler comedy is not, you know, breaking any boundaries in the world of art. But even though it could be, you know, on a cinematic level or with the score or something, but the plot probably isn't going to, you know,
yes,
take home
but
an
the
Emmy
point,
or
the point I'm trying
Oscar.
To make is that just the act of making a film is an art.
Yes.
Now, what? Now, exactly. How you go about crafting whatever you want to make, that's another thing entirely. So why is it crafting a video game any different than like making a movie or making a video game? It's kind of basically the same concept. You got to worry about camera angles, story, just presentation. They're very similar things in between.
And, you know, you can parallel like a complex effects shot in a film is essential, and you know that's sort of like the gameplay coding of a game. You know, like if you don't get that coding right, or if you don't get that effects shot right, it ruins everything.
Exactly. So there is skill involved in making a game. Just the fact that it takes a lot of people to make a creation of a video game, just like it takes a lot of people to make a film.
Sure.
Just the process and the concept is enough to consider it an art form. Now, there will be bad games and there will be good games, just like there will be bad movies and there will be good movies.
I think that's one of the big things, is that there are, you know, percentage of video games, there are a far higher percentage of video games that would be considered less artistic than there would be movies. And that's sort of one of the stumbling blocks where people don't see games as art, because so many of them would be qualified as bad art that it sort of brings the whole genre down.
Yes, and we also have to consider that the video game industry is still very young compared to everything else.
Right.
I mean, the film industry is what, like 100, at least 100 years old, right?
At least 100, there.
Yeah. Yeah, right, so now we look back on, you know, something like The Jazz Singer and see it as like, you know, an amazing accomplishment in film because it's the first movie to have, you know, singing and voice and acting in it. And, you know, we haven't gotten there with games yet. We don't even have a Jazz Singer to look back on yet, because we haven't gotten far enough to look back.
Yeah, we're starting to get there. I think it'll be about 5 or 10 years before there are enough, like, art form games, you could say, to where people will start to realize, yeah, this is the next true art form.
Right, like they'll see the roots back in Super Mario Brothers, you know, and see, oh, that game was revolutionary for its time and broke a lot of boundaries and stuff like that.
Well, I think that you can really call gaming art because you're seeing a lot of so-called artists from other mediums come into games and want to do something. Case in point, Steven Spielberg is coming in to do a video game. You know, Clive Barker, and you know, a very successful author, is doing video games. You could name Peter Jackson doing King Kong. I mean, these things come together in that, you know, other artists from other mediums are saying, oh, this gaming thing, it's got some spice to it. It's something that I want to contribute to because it has potential as an artistic medium.
Sort of like the first writers, you know, who moved into the films industry kind of
right,
thing.
Right, exactly. So there you go.
That's a good way to put it. So how can Ebert say that games are art when one of the film industry's great artists wants to make a game?
There you go.
Yeah, Spielberg is, you know, arguably, I think very easily arguably, the top director of his generation.
Mm-hmm.
And if not, he's certainly up there with the likes of, you know, Scorsese and Coppola and, you know, Kubrick and...
Absolutely.
You know, he's, you know, they're up there, and if he's the top, one of the top guy, if not the top guy, if he says, I want to make a video game, then I think it makes an extremely good case for games as art, even though we all seem to agree that there's no way to deny it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But at the end of the day, I mean, are we ever really going to reach an end to this debate? No.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, everyone considers movies art. Everyone considers painting art. Everyone considers the written word art. Eventually, we will all consider video games art.
Yes.
But it will take a long-ass time.
Yeah, it's going to take a long time. Video games have to stay within popular culture long enough for it to, like, the old generation to kind of grow out of it and die and get all their arguing out of the system. And all the young people will just grow up and accept it, and it'll just be like anything else.
Exactly. You know, Dennis Dyack was used to very fond of saying that, you know, one day the technology will be so advanced that it won't matter how good a game looks, and everything will be concentrated on the artistic presentation of it because the technology will be a level playing field.
And won't that be awesome?
Of course, he said that 10 years ago. He said it was going to happen 5 years ago, and 5 years ago he said it was going to happen now, so who knows when it's really going to happen. Yeah. Especially with Nintendo throwing a curveball in and changing the interface up and not going for
visual. Well, Nintendo thinks that time is now. That's why they just...
Well,
But that's another topic.
That's another topic for another day.
Yeah. Well, I don't even... You know, I wouldn't even call Nintendo saying that time is now, because I certainly wouldn't ever consider Brain Age art any more than I would consider the New York Times crossword art. It's more of an application.
Very true. But then,
like, it's a software application than it is a game.
And then, I mean, there's this whole argument of how you define a game, and we're not going to go into that because that would... extend the podcast way too long. And speaking of which, I do think we're running a little long on time here, so I'm going to go ahead and close it up and say, good debate, fellas. Excellent debate. Remember, guys, if you want to send us email, it's rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. Remember to go to iTunes, subscribe, and review. And, of course, you can dig us by going to the site at nintendoworldreport.com and, of course, just clicking on that little link, clicking dig on dig.com.
Actually, well, no, clicking on that little dig link in the article will dig the news story. We want you to actually dig the podcast.
Well, there's also another link there that says Dig Radio Free Nintendo. So
I'll do that. Do them both.
Do both, because it'll be fun. It'll be fun for everybody. So, yeah, guys, I think that about closes it up. So thank you, Mike. Thank you, Steven, for stopping by.
You're welcome.
And see everybody next week.